Welcome to No Filter Sports. It is August 10th, 2020, and in a sports world that's staggering to a start, there is a lot of news. And the huge story this Monday morning, August 10th, is that the Big Ten has decided not to play football this year following a trend of the last few days where the MAC decided on Saturday. We'll get to that. There's a lot to say about that developing story.
Yeah, they voted because, as you say, it is a developing story. So we don't know. Michigan and Michigan State voted not to play, according to a story by Dan Patrick on ESPN Radio this morning, which the Detroit Free Press quickly picked up. Nebraska and Iowa were the only Big Ten member schools who said they wanted to play this season. The SEC wants to play. The ACC's on the fence. Big 12 on the fence. This is a wild thing going on here. And you're right, Eli. Isn't it nice? There's a lot of sports news to talk about.
It's all, and some of it's positive, I suppose. But this story is, I guess we saw it coming because the difference in this sport, college football, than all the others is there is no union. There's parents involved. There's children, and let's face it, college athletes are children. Most are under 21 years old, and the college system, which is so vast, with spreading across the country with hundreds of schools, there's been no basic protocols, no 113-page manual like in the NBA and in Major League Baseball, and so it's just too dangerous and too uncertain. And look at what's happening with schools in general. My God, how are we going to send kids back to school when even Major League Baseball can't avoid getting all types of infections going around? So anyway, can we put that aside for a moment and get to the current stuff, or you want to finish with this?
There's so much stuff. Go ahead, do whatever you guys want to do.
Well, let's talk about that.
You want to talk with PGA? I mean,
that's we talk about the PGA. We could talk about our great guest we have today, our hilarious guest. Go ahead, Denny. What?
We had a couple of things before we start the show. I've got two things.
We started the show.
I know that, but I mean into the meat of the matter.
Okay.
Number one,
where's beef, Denny?
Yeah, here the beef is coming, Bob. Hang on a minute. Maybe you'll even come in for this. We're going to have an estate auction in my home, my family home, in October, actually, 2, 3, and 4, October 2nd, 3rd, and 4th.
Is this a sports story? We're talking about all this great sports news today.
Oh, I want everybody who listens to the show to know that what we're going to do in the near future.
Where's the beef?
You know, Bob. You know, I mean, it is what it is, Bob. I get 100 calls at the last week asking me how I felt because I made an announcement about because I was being tested for COVID. That's well, right. I guess what? I had 3 tests last week. I had one on Tuesday, which was done at Beaumont Hospital, and I still didn't have the results Friday. So I found an urgent clinic facility that did the tests on the same day, give you almost instantaneous response to your test. I did 2 tests over there. And I was negative in all 3 places, which is the good news. The bad news is, man, you got to wait forever to get these results.
I just
they got to improve this.
I don't get how some are 10 minutes and some are 10 days. But back to the first point.
No, Eli, you have to do your best imitation of Howard Cohen of Brooklyn, New York right now. Remember what he used to say?
Let's move on.
Back to the sports.
No. I'm not quite ready to go back to it. I want to know, even though this estate sale is 2 months down the road, that you felt you needed to mention today. So what I want to know is, what in your house is worth buying? Is it your old furniture? Is it your bed? Are you going to sell memorabilia? What are people going to find when they come to your house worth buying?
Your size triple X
t-shirts, your old underwear. What are they going to buy?
What is this all about? What is all of this disparaging remarks?
Yeah, I'm not disparaging. What's some of the highlights?
It's very disparaging. All kinds of stuff. I got all pinball machines. I've got one-armed bandits. I've got 25 keyboards. I got baseballs up your ass. I've got bats up your ass. I've got everything you can.
Okay.
The house is 7,000 square feet. I don't have any more room in the house.
You know what you're going to get when this is posted? You're going to get nosy neighbors and tourists and sports fans who want to traipse through Denny McClain's house. They ain't going to buy nothing. They want traipse through
they got ways. The auction people have ways of taking care of that. So I'm not even worried about that.
That was wild. All right. So let's.
I don't get the disparaging remarks, is what I don't understand.
No. I just want
to. Oh, stop it. Brandon, don't make me come over there and slap the shit out of you.
you're making the kid work extra now. He's got to edit that, damn it.
No, it's okay. It's just a little bleep.
He's
just
all right.
Then let's take it step by step here. We'll get back to the college thing in a minute because there's many angles on that. But, the Tigers are, the playoff bound Detroit Tigers.
I thought we were talking about the PGA first. Boy, wait a minute. Really, what happened to together the PGA? Here today.
You drinking this morning already?
I don't drink.
I think you threw all of us off a little bit, Denny. That's what I think.
I haven't sparked anything up yet today.
Nothing.
Haven't had my wake and bake yet, as they say. No, I have not done that.
Okay. Well, I'm going to talk about Colin Morikawa.
Go ahead.
Let me tell you a couple things about this kid. And now they're crowning him the greatest player of all time, almost.
No, they're not.
I'm telling you, you have to read the story. You wouldn't believe it. He's already made $7 million.
He's amazing.
On the tour less than a year. Yeah. It is the lowest final round score ever shot by a PGA champion in the history of the PGA. Think about that. In the history. Number two, he's first in proximity to the pin, first in driving accuracy. I mean, that, Bob and Eli, that means hitting the ball in the fairway.
Sure.
First in putting, and first on the leaderboard, obviously yesterday with his, what did he shoot yesterday, 64. It was unbelievable what this kid did. Yes. He's the youngest player in history to break 65 in the final round of a major victory.
And he's
this
not
kid did things yesterday that was unbelievable.
And he is not a fluke because he won last year at the age of 22. He's won three times. He's been one of the best players on tour. It isn't like there have been guys like I think you forget his first name, Hamilton. There have been guys that have won one major championship and then faded into obscurity.
And especially your favorite player on the PGA Tour, and I told you so, and that, of course, would be Gary Woodling. Now, don't forget that this kid also joins Jack, Tiger, and Rory as the only 23-year-olds to ever win the PGA Championship. And fellas, now that you're singing his praises, and he deserves it, seems like a great kid, obviously a great player. I got two words for you. The first is Jordan, and the second one is Spieth. He was the next Tiger. Uh-huh. He was going to own the PGA Tour.
Valid point, but I don't think that's the case. But the difference with this kid is that the Spieth won, but Spieth is a short ball hitter. Spieth had certain elements of his game that were never going to get him up with the big boys. He can't hit with the Koepkas and he can't hit with Dustin Johnson. And so Spieth was more a different type of player. Once his putting magic, which was ridiculous, the guy sunk
there
everything.
Once
he became an average putter, he became, I'd say, maybe a below average PGA player. So valid comparison, but I don't think it's the same thing.
And Koepka now, as everybody knows, he's won two PGAs in a row. But here's the kicker with Koepka. Yesterday, they were talking to him about he was chasing Johnson.
Saturday night.
And Koepka, for some reason, unbeknown to human beings, says, well, I've already got two PGAs. He's only got one. What the hell is that?
No, that's not what he meant.
This is never the trash-talking zone, the PGA, the golf.
You're right.
Get it. I don't know what the hell's wrong with this guy.
Good for him. He's the only one. And even in baseball and football, they're so much more careful to praise everybody so that it doesn't get, posted on the clubhouse wall and all that garbage. He not only went after Dustin Johnson, who he said has only won one major and I've won four, so he didn't really think of him as a rival for this Sunday. And then McIlroy, who is the sweetest kid in the world, is, he goes, I heard that interview. I was kind of taken aback. I don't know whether trying to play mind games or not. He goes, everybody's a great player out here. I mean, it's sort of hard to knock a guy who's got 21 wins in the PGA Tour, which is three times what Brooks has. And what did Brooks say about McIlroy last fall? He said, I don't know. I've been out here for 5 years. Rory hasn't won a major since I've been on the PGA Tour, so I don't view it as a rivalry. So
I want to say this about your beloved game right here of golf. It is, above all else, a gentleman's sport.
It is,
indeed. These aren't prize fighters talking about beating the whooping up on somebody. This is a gentleman's game. You don't do what Koepka did, although he is a West Palm Beach native down here. He seems like a nice enough guy. Zero personality, and golf needs personalities. Now we know that. I just thought it was uncalled for. And like some of these other guys who Patrick Reed comes to mind, a couple of us who've been shooting their mouths off occasionally, this is a gentleman's game, fellas. Shut up, play, and be respectful.
Here's the real problem with Koepka yesterday. He shot a 78. It's one shot from the bottom of the pile. 78 was.
I don't think he shot a 78. No, he's shot four over.
Four over. He's. I'm telling you, it says right here.
Four over is not 78.
Four over 74, which he exactly one player out of the 78 he was competing against.
Yes,
that's said, the, that's his problem. That's what he was mad about. He wasn't mad at Johnson or anybody else. He was mad because he was playing like Eli.
But that's he said that after.
Eli's pretty good. Stop being
he is not
what
any
is
good.
Going
he's got a 12.
On here. All I wanted to say was you said 78 shot 74, and he said the comments before he shot 74. He said them Saturday night. So
what difference does it make? He said them.
What difference does the order of things make or the numbers? Makes no difference, does it?
Okay. Well, you know, Brandon and I are sitting here listening to the two of you jaw about this, and I want to hearken back to the last show we did in which Denny predicted, and it was amazing what Denny predicted, that the winning score would be 10 under. Now, we had seven guys tied at 10 under with like two holes to play. Eli immediately railed against Denny and said, no way. Denny, why did you think it would be 10 under? Eli, why did you not?
Because of the nature of the golf course. San Francisco is cold during the summer. It's wet. It's damp. There's always a breeze blowing. You've got to really know how to play the winds out there. And they're not big time winds. They're just slight winds. And you better be able to play into them all the time. I played out there a lot when I played with Oakland. And I got to tell you something. It's a great, great golf course. But the bottom line is it's a bear to play.
Yeah, well, that's what, and Bob, to answer your question, that's why I thought the scores would be lower. I didn't know much about Harding Park. I just know that Harding was
I've never heard of it before.
Kind of a forgotten president, the 21st president, I think. But it's windy, just what Denny said. It's cold. Yeah. It's long. I mean, look, they had three or four par fours that are over 500 yards. I just didn't think, and maybe the lack of crowds and that pressure is allowing these guys to play better because it's stunning how well so many of them are playing. I don't know how much the quality has gone up in golf, whether you can measure it, but these guys have this year, since the tour started up, have been amazing.
I think no crowds help the young kids. Mm-hmm. I think big crowds help the older guys.
Why?
Yeah.
Just because the crowd gets behind the senior, not the senior players, but the guys that are 35, 40, been out there, they won some tournaments, and they start cheering for their favorite. Listen, Tiger will always be cheered, whether he shoots a 65 or a 75. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of thing. They're not going to do that for these first year players. Yeah, they'll politely applause, they'll politely cheer, but they won't do what they'll do for Tiger and even Koepka now, with him popping off and doing some other things off the golf. He does a lot of charity work, by the way.
And don't forget, when these young players come on the tour, they've played on these minor tours. They played in college where there's no fans. And so the fans were another element. You hear the roar in the other hole. What'd this guy do? You know, they're in your face. As soon as you hit the ball, somebody's screaming in the hole.
Wasn't it interesting yesterday? There were all the people who were looking inside from outside the fence. And you did hear fans screaming. And you did hear a couple jerks yell inside the hole. So they haven't totally disappeared. And Eli, I'm embarrassed for you. As a graduate of the Augusta University of Michigan, have you forgotten the Teapot Dome scandal?
Yeah, well, that was
the lowlight of Warren Harding's administration. Oh, okay. He was one of the most corrupt presidents, one of the most corrupt administrations in the history of this country. So not a lot of people have forgotten about Warren G. Harding.
I'd heard of Teapot Dome. I did not associate it with Warren Harding, however. And so in any case, I don't know whether Morikawa would have been affected by the crowds, whatever. I don't know. But the kid's remarkable.
By the way, I thought Harding was a pitcher with Baltimore at one time.
Harding?
Was there a pitcher named Harding?
I don't know. Yeah,
very close to Harding.
Harden.
Harding, and we could talk about Reggie Harding for a long time, the 7-foot basketball player out of Detroit.
Oh, that's right.
When Denny gets 80% of the letters right, that's good enough. That's solid. That's done. Okay.
Thank you,
when you said Koepka had a 78, I had to interrupt you. I'm sorry. I'm with you two guys. I wind up being fact checker half the time. So the Tigers are 8-5. Can we get? Oh, by the way, am I allowed to switch back to this? Have we burnt out the Open?
The blessing has been given to you. PG. Go ahead.
The only thing you're not allowed to do is, because we're so radical ass disorganized today on the show, is that you're not allowed to go to a commercial break because you gave me six commercials. You didn't tell me which ones I'm supposed to read.
I'll tell you what
I'm
going to
read them.
I'll read two, and then you can read two the next time. You can pick whatever two you want.
Okay. Oh,
all right. So the Tigers are 8-5. They sweep the Pirates. The Friday night game was, crazy. It's 17-13, back and forth, seesaw in 11 innings. And then, do you want to talk about that before I
I do. And again, I want to give kudos to Danny McLain here on this Friday night game.
Now,
Danny said last year that the Tigers were going to trade Matt Boyd. He was partially right, because they should have traded Matt Boyd, and Denny knew that. Yeah. But they didn't trade Matt Boyd. They kept him. And Denny, from a pitching standpoint, what is wrong with this young man who's supposed to be the ace of the Detroit staff?
There's a golden rule every pitcher must understand. You cannot throw the ball down the middle at the belt. You can't do it. Everything he throws
unless
is
it's
down
105
the middle of the
from Aroldis Chapman.
and when he throws a curveball, it's up above the waist. You cannot pitch like that. I don't know. It's a lack of this or lack of that. Maybe he's not in great shape. Although for these guys not to be in great shape would be crazy. But it is what it is. And I still think, boy, the biggest deal they could have made was the Boyd deal over the winter.
Yeah. It's been talked about for a couple of years at the trade deadline. Well, Jack Morris, I said last time Boyd pitched, said his 93-mile-an-hour fastball doesn't look 93 for whatever his release point or whether he hides it or whatever. And he said he doesn't have a changeup. And if his slider isn't good and he's just got the fastball, then he's kind of limited is the way he presented it. But
here's what happens when your fastball starts to lose velocity. Your movement on the ball stops unless you start making adjustments with your hand and your wrist. Nothing else is consistent at that point in time. So he's kind of, you know, got a great arm, but he's going to have to start over and come up with a fastball that he can throw for strikes.
And yeah, he's lost a foot off his fastball. Watch, I don't get that. And Denny, since the three of us talk about pitching all the time here, or lack of same. So the Pirates bring in somebody named Miguel Del Pozo in relief, bases loaded with Detroit Tigers. They put up a font. This kid has walked 8 guys so far this year and gotten 5 outs. The only other Pittsburgh Pirates pitcher with that horrendous ratio since 1901 was the immortal Bill Martin in 1955. I mean, geez, you see some of these guys out there, it makes me as an old man want to pick up a bat and go to the plate.
Wow. Let me make 2 points on what's been said so far. When Justin Verlander was struggling here, there were two years, I can't, was it 15, 16, whatever, before he kind of pulled it together. He was throwing 97. The ball had no movement. He was getting hit hard. So whatever it is, whether that going to the Astros or some adjustment that he made, I don't know. The second thing is you mentioned Aroldis Chapman. This is why, and I want to get into again, you know, the no fans and why baseball and sports look so different. And it's kind of a constant reminder that we're still in the COVID thing. Here is what Yankee announcer Michael Kay. This is what we've come to expect.
My old colleague.
This is what's come. Of course, I knew you would mention that because anytime a name comes up, you say, I know him. Okay, so you know Michael Kay.
I didn't say that. I said he's my old colleague.
When Lou Henson, you go, I know him. Okay, Bob, we know you know a lot of people. You don't have to say that every time.
That's true.
Here is Michael Kay, your former colleague from New York when you were there for 20 years. Okay, here's what he had to say. Quote, Zach Britton filling in for Aroldis Chapman, who's on the COVID-19 list. Hey, he's had 2 negative test results, but they won't rush him back. This is what we hear now, as opposed to a real injury. It's the COVID factor about all these guys.
And you know, that's a great point, because now that the Tigers are done with this series in Pittsburgh, do you know where Pittsburgh goes next? They go to play a series with St. Louis.
Maybe.
They've canceled that entire Pirates card series now, because St. Louis says with all the COVID positive tests they had, they're not ready to resume playing.
Well, the worst part about that is they're going to probably not play for up to 15 days, too. That's going to be the problem.
They've only played 5 games. They have
2-3.
The Cardinals are 2-3.
Yeah, they're only 1 game out of first place, 2-3.
Yeah, they had a crawl on the game the other night. I guess this was the Saturday game with all those home runs. The crawl on the TV screen had the Cubs playing the Cardinals. The Cubs' record was 10-2. As you say, the Cards record was 2-3. Mm. How are they going to make up all these games and have a meaningful season?
And if they go by percentages, like they say, what if the Cards win their next, they come back, they win their next 6 games, and now they're 8-3, and then they're out for the rest of the season. They're supposed to go on the percentage that would get them into the playoffs, because their percentage would be playoff ready.
Well, they're doing everything on the fly right now. I hardly doubt that they would take that up, and they would take it up right away and dismiss that idea that they could play 11 games and win the championship.
Everything changes every day.
You two, You two historians can help me with this. I mean, we got to go to commercial break.
I want to talk.
But in 1959, didn't Tito Francona essentially win the American League batting championship?
363.
There you go. But he was disqualified because he didn't have enough at bats. Right. So what if the Cardinals run the table? They're going to be disqualified from the playoffs or World Series. Well, he didn't play enough games.
It's all unofficial. All the numbers are changed. Hey, Dr. Yaldo is open again and doing what he's done for tens of thousands of Detroiters, including me, giving them freedom from glasses, contacts, or reading glasses, and giving them the best vision of their lives. Now, most custom LASIK patients under 45 get better than 20/20 vision without glasses and without contacts. And if you're over 45, like everybody listening right now, please ask Dr. Yaddle about multifocal lens exchange. You'll see the microscopic print without reading glasses. Your far vision will be in high def HD. I promise you, I got it. This is not hype. And these surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. Get a free evaluation. Find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can only imagine. Call 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaddleYCenter.com and tell them No Filter Sports sent you, and you'll get special discounts. Hey, and everybody in Michigan knows Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars. And in buying a Lincoln, you can demand that both the buying and the service elements must be unequaled. It's why Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln leads the field. This is an exemplary family business started by Hoot, the legendary auto giant and philanthropist. In July alone, Star got nearly 105 star reviews. Here a few. A woman writes, "My entire experience was more than wonderful." Another says, "The entire team from sales, business manager to service is an example of premier customer service." Yet another, "The buying process during this pandemic was made so easy at Star and quicker than I anticipated. I've gotten 6 cars from Star, Detroit's premier Lincoln dealership." Make an appointment at 248-354-4900 or buy effortlessly online at starlincoln.com. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Oh, do we have a guest for you today? And I guess it's special for me because Steve Kemp's career basically began when mine did. They drafted him in January 1976 at a USC All-American, played on 2 national championships under the legendary Coach
Rod Dado.
Hall of Famer. And his experiences dealing with Jim Campbell, and by the way, he was the highest paid Tiger in history twice, beating Campbell at arbitration, which may have led to his being traded for Chet Lemon later on. But Kemper's a riot. He's a great guy.
Give
us
the numbers. Give us the numbers.
What numbers? What was
twice he was the highest paid player in Tiger history.
He made $600,000 with a second arbitration. I think it was in 78 or 79. Think of that. That was the highest salary in baseball because free agency didn't begin until 1976. That's when Messersmith and McNally won the suit at Marvin Miller pushed through to the Supreme Court.
And Wayne Garland made $1 million a year. And No, he didn't. What did he make?
6 years, $1.8 million. He made $300,000 a year. The first free agent contracts were like Rennie Stennett made $600,000 a year, 4 years, $2.4 million at the time. Those were unheard of salaries. And so a guy like Kemp, who had a good year in 77 and 78, was awarded that kind of money, and Campbell freaked out. In fact, as Kemp will say, Campbell told Kemp, "I'm going to have to cut the salaries of the secretaries to pay you this money." Yeah. What do you think of that, Denny?
I think the reason Lance Farish didn't finish his entire career as a Detroit Tiger is because he had the temerity to ask Jim Campbell for $1 million a year, which wasn't even high then.
But that's the way that was collusion. That was collusion. They were all in that bag.
But that's the way Campbell worked. He used everything against you, so he didn't have. Listen, Northrop has a hell of a year in '68. They give him a offered him a $5,000 raise. That's all. And they made they drew over 2 million people. It made no sense at all. That's what everybody was upset with Jim. And yet, 10, 20 years later, if you need a favor, Jim Campbell would be the first guy to step up and help you.
He's already beaten you for $300,000 in salary, so he's going to help you by lending you $5,000. That's great.
That's exactly
and
right.
Fellas, nice. Don't forget that this situation merely mirrors the entire history of the American labor movement. You look back, the sweatshops, child labor of the late 19th century, and then the rise of labor unions, and then it got to the point where the labor unions were in control instead of the owners of businesses. I mean, it's no different. The players were ripped off for so long, and then the tail began wagging the dog eventually.
Yes and no. I would like to call it equality, a division of the money. that the players are the product, and they said, we're the product. Without us, there is no game. Perhaps you should treat us more fairly, or not have a law that you pushed through the Supreme Court in 1922, Oliver Wendell Holmes, saying, yes, you are property of the team. Baseball isn't interstate commerce, even though they're in various states, and they own you as long as they want to. That's what the problem was.
Did you know that Oliver Wendell Holmes was one of the greatest Civil War heroes the United States ever had? You look at his battle history, the battles he was in, the chances he took. He never should have sat on the United States Supreme Court. He should have been dead.
Wait a minute. That was 1922, though.
He was born about 1840. He would have been 75 or 80 or something like that. Wow.
All right, some other baseball notes. Zach Plesac of Cleveland. Has he been banned? Has he been pushed
They just put him in a car and made him drive back to Cleveland so they didn't have to have him around any other players because he broke all the rules with the baseball team. But 1 month ago, he got up in the middle of the clubhouse and made a big speech about Jesus, God help us. Everybody must be responsible. Everybody must live up to the rules. Everybody must do the right thing. And he's the guy that walks out of the clubhouse. So
yeah, he had pitched in Chicago on Saturday. He's from the area. He won the game, by the way. And then he went and partied with some friends. Mm-hmm. They found out about it. And he said, I made a poor choice to leave the hotel. Could have endangered other people. I'm determined to earn my teammates' forgiveness. But yes, you're right, Denny. Last month he'd said, we're given this privilege to be able to come back and play. It's time to buckle down for a couple of months, lock in and focus on what we have set for us at the end of the year. And then he blew it.
But, you know, I will say that he's apparently not positive for COVID-19. Since we've segued somehow into this subject, I didn't see a whole lot of social distancing in the final round of the PGA Championship on Sunday. I'm looking at caddies and golfers and officials with no masks talking to each other from 8 to 10 inches away. So it's hard, you know?
You know, I agree with you a little bit, but you know, they've been tested like 2 and 3 times a day at that tournament. By that time, you would think it's a pretty good area.
But I think what you're saying more applies to applies more to the other sports, where now baseball made new protocols last week after the whole St. Louis fiasco,
and again.
The players are really, really. It's strict. They have to wear face coverings over their mouths and noses at all times in the stadiums, except for players in the field. The players and staffers have to wear masks all the time in hotels, except when they're alone in their room. They got to be surgical masks. Here's the thing, and I don't want to get off the subject here, but a guy sent me a video yesterday talking about kids going back to school. You know, when you breathe into a mask, the carbon dioxide that you breathe out remains in there. When you breathe in, you have too high a level of carbon dioxide. It's not safe to wear a mask.
And if you had onions for breakfast or something, sitting there smelling that in the inside of your mouth.
That's not what I'm talking about science now. I'm not talking about personal discomfort. And the fact is it's unsafe to wear these masks for too long. The way it needs to work, I think, is when you're in a dangerous situation or you're going indoors or with other people and you're too close, you put it on. But to wear it all day long, this is the saddest thing, because the mask can save us. At the same time, they're hurting our health even more.
Okay. So I had more baseball, but since you're mentioning this, it's a natural segue into the college football thing. Okay. We mentioned it at the top of the program. The Mid-American Conference canceled its entire season last week over COVID fears, but a lot of people are saying that's only a part of it. When the Big 13 plus Rutgers made that bizarre announcement to only play conference opponents, that took away millions and millions of dollars in revenue from Central Michigan, Western, Eastern, Toledo, Bowling Green. And it's like there's no reason to play the season now without those big paydays we were going to get. And I continue to say, I don't know why those smaller universities couldn't have just hopped on a bus for a short ride to Ann Arbor and played some non-conference games. It doesn't make any sense to me. But this thing is blowing up this week as we record this program. And I don't know what they're going to do. I suspect they're talking about playing in the spring, the whole football season in the Big Ten next year.
And I think the entire face of college football changes this week. And I don't know if we know what's going to happen. Even if they cancel, the face of college football will change in one form or another. Because, boy, I tell you, the way we're going at this, it certainly doesn't look like we're making tons of progress. Although we hear good reports about vaccinations from time to time. Boy, it's this thing is just draining everybody at this point.
The whole face of college sports will change because football fuels all the other sports. It's going to be the worst effect is going to be to the volleyball team and the field hockey team and the wrestling team and all that, because they're not going to have that support. And you know what's it's sad to see how much money has entered into this entire decision. And I tell you, I knew it was going downhill. I mentioned to you 3 weeks ago or two weeks ago when Chris Hinton, the NFL superstar, 13 years, his son is at Michigan, and he's and his wife, who's a lawyer, it started a national campaign, a social media where all the parents of all the football players and saying they're not taking care of our kids. Some are going to get very sick. There's no health insurance after their eligibility is up, and that they're not caring about their health. They're caring about the money. And at that point, you knew it was all going under.
Then they don't care about us. They don't care about media people or the most important thing, you fans listening right now. You know, we're going to miss, I'm going to miss college football so much. It takes up every one of my Saturdays. And I never miss a Michigan or Michigan State game. And if there's a great college game on national TV Saturday night, I'm going to watch that or maybe drive down to Miami to see the Hurricanes play. This is going to be a nightmare. And the personalities? Now, boys, right after we recorded Thursday, the story broke that there had been a major tiff at the weekly Big 13 plus Rutgers.
Can you just say Big 10? Jesus, what is this Big 13 plus? Can you just say the Big 14 or something? Why do you have to do this every single time?
Because there are not 10 universities in the Big 10.
Please.
It's a joke. It's a travesty. Okay. It's a travesty. And I'm going to continue to
Why don't you call it the Midwest Division One Conference then? But go ahead.
Right. Well, now that you've wasted half the show talking
about the
about
Big
that.
Seven plus six others and name them. I don't care.
So anyway, at the teleconference, here's Ohio State coach Ryan Day. He's talking, you know, doing his thing they always do. Suddenly, Harbaugh interrupts him in mid-answer, and he accuses Ryan Day of violating rules by having on-field instructions and drills taking place already while it's not permitted yet by the NCAA. Ryan Day snaps back, "How about I worry about my team and you worry about your team?" And after the call, Day apparently was so fired up, he told his team that Michigan had better hope for a mercy rule because the Buckeyes are going to hang. This is a quote. Buckeyes are going to hang 100 points on them. I'm going to miss that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm going to miss it too. So a Ward manual at Michigan, basically, this is before this decision, obviously, this morning on Monday, August 10th, to cancel the season. All the Big Ten teams are saying, look, we're going to lose so much money. We're going to be $61 million less in revenue with no fans there. And they're asking their season ticket holders to donate the seat license fee, which is a pretty considerable, it's the cost of what, if you buy two tickets, season tickets, the cost of one of those tickets is going to be for your personal seat license. Right. So it's incredibly expensive. And so they're desperate for the money. Penn State, which is a really nasty letter to their season ticket holders, said, hey, we'll give you a full refund this year, but if you don't donate it to our fund or you don't roll it over into 21, you're not going to be guaranteed your seat locations next year. And Ward Manuel said the same thing, basically, please consider converting your previous preferred seat contribution, your season ticket payments, towards a tax-deductible gift to the Champions Fund. So,
and again, we don't know where this is going. Is there going to be a next year in college football? Who knows?
Well, they're hoping for spring. They're hoping for a spring season. That's what Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren was saying the other day. He said, look, we've all said, let's keep pushing. I thought it was the best strategy. It's certainly not playing out that way. Now it's just water torture, he called it. He said this whole process of water. Now the water torture is at least over in trying to do the impossible and keep everybody safe and tested.
All right, it's a whole bunch of gobbledygook because the fans are going to step up, the boosters are going to step up, they're going to pay the money that is required. Just look at what happened with all these sex scandals. They're asking for money to help settle these things, to give them extra money, and the people are donating like crazy. So we don't have to worry about additional dollars they're going to take in. The boosters always do the right thing.
Maybe so.
The boosters always do the right thing.
Danny,
the guys who are paying kids illegally.
Danny, 100,000 people in the stands. It isn't all the boosters, but that's okay. Many will step up. But how about this? Jim Harbaugh and men's basketball coach Juwan Howard are among the department employees to accept a pay cut. Harbaugh took a 10% salary reduction. Now, my question is, if they don't play football, how about 100% salary reduction? What will they pay Jim Harbaugh this year to not coach football?
Well, he's got a recruit, Eli.
And who pays for that?
He's still got a recruit.
Yeah, he's still got a recruit, Eli.
Okay, all right.
But I'll tell you something else. This guy's got another problem at the University of Michigan. You remember we had Mark Spindler, the former Lion, on the show?
Yes.
His son Rocco's in the kitchen. And I yell out to Mark over in our interview. I said, ask Rocco where he's going to school. Because he apparently was down to Michigan, Notre Dame, and a couple others. Well, after we take the show again, he chose Notre Dame late last week ahead of Michigan. Mm-hmm. There's another guy Harbaugh's lost, another great national player. They say he's one of the top five high school offensive linemen in America, right under Michigan's nose in Clarkston, Michigan. And I also think that we should note Michigan State was not in the mix for these kids. Think they would have been if Mark D'Antonio were still head coach?
No, Spindler said that Notre Dame is known for offense, like you call it offense.
And Michigan isn't.
That's what I was going to say. Isn't Michigan known as offensive line? Haven't they had those more great? Okay.
Well, it's like I said earlier, the boosters will always do the right thing.
and if they play in the spring, if they do this in the Big Ten, which is their hope right now, many top eligible guys for the draft will opt out because the eligibility piece is very, very important. If it isn't a meaningful season, a kid's not going to waste a year of eligibility and proving himself for the pros. So there's so many problems. It just gets crazier. It's as the Big Ten commissioner said, it's water torture.
You know who's listening right now? You know who's listening to us?
I know.
Luke Nowacki. Luke is a huge fan of the show, as well as being one of our big sponsors. Pinnacle Wealth Strategies is the name of his business. It's a longstanding Red Shovel Network supporter for Drew Lane and has served many of our listeners very well by creating financial plans, business plans, and trust for them. Now, whether it's planning for future family obligations or your own retirement, why not let Luke develop a comprehensive plan for you? He's got decades of experience and a big track record of success in creating custom solutions for your business or individuals just like you. If you call Luke, and the number is 248-663-4748, he's going to set up a complimentary consultation. You go in, you sit down with him, ask him anything you want, then sit back. Let Luke do his thing by laying out a plan that fits your individual needs. He's ethical, incredibly knowledgeable, and caring. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, call 248-663-4748. And Eli, I've messed up the copy. Advisory services offered through somebody at least. Royal Alliance Associates is on there as well. Now, you guys know that interest rates are at dramatic record lows. That should encourage almost anybody to take advantage of it before it's too late. Is it time to refinance your home right now? You can't do better than with David Hall Mortgage. David's been a part of the greater Detroit community for over three decades. He built his business and then has maintained his leadership in the mortgage market by constantly offering better options and more personal attention to thousands of satisfied clients. Hall Financial also provides the fastest service in the business, generally three or fewer weeks. And all this has enabled them to garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners. So again, go to davidhallmortgage.com or to get started, just call them. Easy number to remember, 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, and more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
All right, I got a question for you. Is you ready?
Sure.
What do all these teams have in common? The Texans, the Chargers, the Cards, the Panthers, the Patriots, and the Seahawks.
They each lost eight guys?
No. Not one of those six teams have had a positive. Not one.
So far.
Yeah. So far. It's unbelievable. And then there's another NFL issue, and that's with the referees. They're having all kinds of issues with the referees because they want to become full-time employees. And lo and behold, the NFL is not going to have any of it. As a matter of fact, what the heads of state there, as I call them at the NFL, they're now saying to the referees, if you opt out for this season, you may not have your position frozen for the following year. So they're kind of blackmailing.
That's not what I
guys.
Read. I think yes, they did. Well, guarantee.
Bob, you misread it. You're old. You know what I mean? So go back and read the.
You're always right, Danny. Go ahead.
Thank you, Bob. Normally I am, Bob. But the bottom line is, one of those it's either an opt-in or an opt-out. Is it about opting in and opting out?
That's the only two choices they have.
That's exactly right. And if they opt in, they've implied that their positions are going to be pretty seriously protected.
All right. Now, the thing you two guys like to talk about as much as anything on this program is football gambling or gambling on any sport. So now enters Art Schliester, the former Ohio State quarterback.
Poor Art.
You'll recall he was sentenced in 2012 for that fraudulent ticket scheme in which he stole millions of dollars from victims by selling them tickets to major sporting events that didn't deliver. And then so he used that money to support his gambling habit, and that sent him to prison. He's now applied for early release, but his gambling apparently is still an issue in jail. An investigation shows that Schliester's been using email to place his bets through a woman on the outside, was scheduled to be released from federal prison in Colorado August 18th, but now they're going to send him back to Ohio instead, where he's going to serve the remainder of his sentence.
Remember we had him on,
man. It's all addiction.
Very sad. Remember we had him on our show, Danny. He was great.
Yeah, Wasn't he?
Was he playing for the arena team or something in town? Yeah. I forget. Yeah.
Yep.
Poor guy. What a terrible addiction. You know, back to the NFL a second and opting out. Is it the Jets? Yeah, the Jets. Leo Kalamatangi. How's that? Kalamatangi opted out.
I watch every Jets game. I've never heard of the kid. Never heard of him.
He's an offensive lineman. He opted out. You know, he said, and this is the point about safety. He goes, when I play, I'm literally bear hugging another creature on the other side of the ball every single play. If that guy has any symptoms, I'm going to get them. For myself, I couldn't take those chances.
And well, they've devised masks for these linemen just because of that, Eli. Why is he going to get the symptoms if he's wearing a big mask? And the other kid is too.
I don't think they've really determined what masks are going to be worn and how they're going to look and all of that. But so in the NBA, now the bubble has worked. The bubble has been amazing in the NBA. Not any games have had to be canceled because they're all in that complex down there in Florida. And here's what's so interesting about this crazy topsy-turvy world that we're in right now. Greg Popovich stands, and he's one of the most socially active, the pro Black Lives Matter. He stands for the anthem, and now we're saying, why did he stand for the anthem? So it's in the reverse. We used to say, why did you kneel? Now we're saying, why did you stand? And he's also the only coach that wears his mask the entire game. And he was asked about that, why he stays faithful to the mask, and the simple reply, I don't want to die.
So if you stand up for our national anthem now, it's something you shouldn't be doing. You should be kneeling or sitting.
I'm saying everybody knelt. He stood.
Yes.
And the question was, I'm just talking about how absurd it all is. Now we're questioning why somebody stands instead of kneels. That's how crazy.
Unbelievable. That's how crazy it is.
And how about this, how crazy that is? So the players on the sidelines have socially distanced area where they sit, where they have their own little Gatorade station, and they're kept 6 feet away. Then they're called into the game, and they sweat and spit on everybody. So what's going on here?
I don't know. And then the nonsense continues. Denny's hometown, Chicago, middle of Sunday afternoon, 2:30. Police get a report of a man with a gun in one of the bad neighbors of Chicago. So you know what? They got to go check this out. They locate the guy. He starts running away from the police, and then he pulls his gun and he shoots at the police. But of course, the police shot back. Duh. They wounded him. But a crowd of about 30 people immediately faced off against the cops as some idiot had spread false information that the police had shot and wounded a child. And then they had a riot. They had a riot right through Midtown Chicago with all the beautiful stores. And there was looting and everything. And this is all part of Black Lives Matter, I guess.
Easy now. It's not a part of Black Lives. Looting is not a part of Black Lives Matter.
Shouldn't be.
Looting
is criminal. It's criminal behavior.
Exactly. Don't say that Black Lives Matter is criminal activity. Bob, think of what you're saying, okay?
Some of it is.
Tell me one Black Lives Matter advocate who says looting is part of our agenda. Tell me what, okay?
Robinson of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Fine, okay. Hey, how about this day in sports? Can we do that?
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
All right. By the way, we said a lot about Ty Cobb and how crazy he was. Yes or no, maybe he was a lunatic, maybe he wasn't. It was on this day in 1905 that his mother, Amanda, killed his father, her husband, as he came in through a bedroom window and she shot him to death. It was in this day in 1963 that the Mets' Roger Craig tied a National League record with an 18, and ended his 18-game losing streak, I should say that. 1971, here's what changed baseball forever. 16 baseball researchers formed the Sabre Group, Society for American Baseball Research, that has changed the entire way we look at the game.
He gets.
Isn't that something? PGA Championship ended in Oakland Hills today. Irishman Padraig Harrington won his second straight major, beating Sergio Garcia and Ben Curtis. Harrington said to me one of the most interesting things about playing golf in America. He said, the reason it's so hard to tour the PGA Tour, when be on the tour when you're a foreigner, every town looks the same. He says, you can stay in the same hotel room. You can stay in the same room you want, any town you're in. And whereas Europe is so much different from state to state or country to country. Moving on. Well, I got the wrong list here. Packers founded how about this? 1950.
You got to prepare this a little.
Yankee great Joe DiMaggio benched for the first time, and he still hit 301 for the season. It was 51 was his last year, and it was in the fourth game of the World Series that year that Mickey Mantle was shading over to center field. It was DiMaggio's ball. Mantle stopped, his cleat caught in the ground. A sprinkler, an underground sprinkler.
Sprinkler head.
And affected him for the rest of his career.
Yep.
Tough. Let's see.
Watch me do my Eli Zarrett imitation now. Are we almost done? Are we almost done with this day in sports? Are we almost done?
Well, let's do the mailbag.
Yes, we're almost done. here's something Daniel appreciate. Here's my last one. 1992. The Oakland A's rip Jose Canseco for leaving the stadium before the end of the game. Denny, did you ever leave the stadium before the game was over?
Not without permission. And I will also say this, every pitcher that I ever played with, if they got knocked out of a game early, they were out of the ballpark. They were out. They didn't want to stick around and have somebody stick a recorder in front of them and say, well, what happened today? Oh, well, I made a lot of great pitches, but they hit them all today.
Okay, before we get to the mailbag, I have a couple of things we really have to mention. First of all, how about the continuing great play of Grosse Pointe native Zach Werenski? His goal in the first period was the game winner Sunday night. The Blue Jackets defeated the Leafs 3-0 in the decisive game 5 of their playoff series. But more than Zach being one of the top defensemen of the NHL now, a bigger story, what about the Leafs? They still haven't won a Stanley Cup since 1967. They paid Babs millions of dollars to come in and turn it around, fire him 3 years later, and now people in Toronto, arguably the hockey capital of the world, have to watch Columbus, Ohio eliminate them from the playoffs? That's pretty weird. Izzo's been cleaning up on the recruiting trail, gang. As you know, one of Michigan basketball's top targets in the 2021 class, however, five-star guard Jalen Worley, shockingly committed to Florida State on Sunday afternoon, picking the Seminoles over the Wolverines. He's like one of the top 25 players in America. And now we turn to the man who's become our resident NASCAR expert, Dennis Dale McClain, who has a full report on what happened Sunday in the huge races at Michigan International Speedway in the Irish Hills.
Bob, first of all, I think the race was Saturday.
No, they said yesterday. Doubleheader yesterday.
And who do you think? And who do you think won, Bob?
I think, as a matter of fact, that Kevin Harvick won.
He won the race.
Because he won both ends of the doubleheader. They don't do that, but the first race was postponed due to the COVID-19 pandemic. They cut the distance. I thought you were supposed to give this report.
And the other kid was our Michigan kid who finished second, right?
Brad Keselowski, you're talking about finished second? I really don't know. So that's all I got to say here. You want to do the mailbag now?
I do have to do two more spots. Let me do that.
Go ahead. Do a quick commercial break. Right. Go ahead.
Feldman Automotive, Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. 5 locations, Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, Highland.
Have to read that fast.
They have 9 locations. Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Kia of Novi, Feldman Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven, and Michigan's top-rated pre-owned supercenter in Waterford, known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. Buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman and relax with their exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee. It is a can't-lose proposition, and Feldman adds the unmatchable kicker with their exclusive guaranteed credit approval. We're proud and confident that you can find what you need at one of Feldman's 9 locations. Let them earn your business at the same time. Support No Filter Sports. You can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com, hassle-free at home or in the showroom. We also encourage you to consider Power Home Solar, America's fastest-growing solar energy company. All of their state-of-the-art panels are made in America. With solar energy, you save money, help the environment, and also help yourself avoid those costly and incredibly infuriating power outages, because Power Home Solar is partnered now with Generac, nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. So with Power Home Solar's panels and Generac, you'll be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for your in-home energy. Yes, lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages forever. Owner Jason Waller and Power Home Solar have financing starting at $99 a month. Call them at 1-800-POWER-90. Save an additional $1,800. Support our guys so they'll continue to support us. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Brandon, do we say goodbye to radio now? Let's say goodbye to our loyal listeners at WCWA in Toledo. Steve Kemp is coming up next. You can download it if you want. You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Now, I got a little beef here. We always on the show these days have a hysterical cut from Shep. And didn't you have a Shep cut ready to go?
Oh, yes,
the Tigers hit 4 home runs in the first inning on Saturday night. Go ahead.
Shep is both enthusiastic and, as you hear, a little bit corny. True. That's okay. He's a little bit corny. But the Tigers did hit 4 homers and 11 pitches off of Derek Holland, the former Ranger. And here is how Matt told us about it. Listen up.
Goodrum turns on one, sends one to deep left. That ball is gone. A home run for Nico Goodrum. Cabrera 1-for-4 in the Friday night opener. 0-2 lifted to left. Carrying deep and history. A 2-run blast for Miguel Cabrera. And the whooping sticks have come out here in the first for Detroit. His third homer of the year. Big swing on this one to deep right center. Come on. It's out of here. Derek Holland's looking like, what's going on? Here's Jamer Candelario.
Oh,
and he launches one to left. That ball's deep. That ball's gone. Are you kidding me?
No.
This is incredible. Kobe Jones sends one to deep center field, and that's gone.
Bye-bye.
Jacoby Jones hits a bomb to center, and the fifth homer for the Tigers today.
Gibby doing his best Jim Price imitation to talk over Dan Dickerson. Oh, my. Bye-bye.
We're going to have Dick Vitale on the show this Thursday, our next program with Dick Vitale. And I think Shep has got to be paying some royalties to Vitale on that stuff. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
The whipping sticks. I never heard of that one before. The whipping sticks. Okay. Yeah.
All right, so you want to go to the mailbag?
I'll go to the mailbag.
This is going to be very disappointing to you. There's not a lot here today. Remind you all that you can.
Oh, what a break.
I love the bag. I'm going to miss the bag. Talk slowly.
You can tweet us at Eli Zarrett, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. Now, you know, I personally got a lot of really positive comments about our interview with Jim Essien on the last show, one of which came from Rick Goslin, the Pro Football Hall of Fame writer who's worked out of the Dallas Morning News for many years. Rick grew up on the far east side of Detroit. We played Little League baseball against one another. He was a hell of a hockey player, too, and he played sports at tiny St. Ambrose over there, right on the Detroit border. So he played against Essien a lot because Jimmy had gone to another small Catholic school, St. Mary's. Said he really, really enjoyed hearing from Jim on the show after all these years.
Wasn't it St. Martin's?
Yeah. Oh, did I say St. Mary's? Sorry about it. Yes, St. Martin's. Oh, okay. So now, here's Clausen Bibbins, longtime listener, friend of the show, and there was one Twitter thread about the controversial New York Post sports columnist Phil Mushnick, and I sent it out, and Clausen responded, "The Detroit papers have not had a thought-provoking sports columnist in eons. So glad your podcast has been there to fill the void." Why, I learned more about the essence of humanity through Denny's oft-repeated tale of Leon Spink's lamb chop smuggling than anything else I ever learned in the sports section.
Well, isn't that tidy whities, huh? I mean, I hope you don't choke on his tidy whities. That's all I can tell you. You know,
I'm just waiting.
You know, I mean, listen, you had to be there to. And somebody sent me a picture. Somebody sent me a picture of Leon standing over the keyboard in this place, And you swear that this must be the day he got fired because the coat is bulging out. And
it's the middle of August.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Clausen and I are just waiting for the next time you told that same story, because it might be, you know, like ribeye steaks he smuggled out.
Contrary to what you think, people don't tune in to listen to you. You know, I'm sorry.
What are they listening to then? You?
Stop. Stop it. Stop this sophomore sniping.
Tom, you know I love you, Danny. Stop.
Well, yeah, but you, Bob, but you, Bobby, everyone, you can be so damn annoying. You know it.
Hey, are you kidding me? If I couldn't get Danny McLean's goat and jerk his chain, my life would not be worth living.
What you do is you jerk his chain four times to piss him off. Then you say, oh, and you were my idol. I couldn't believe how great it was to watch you growing up. And then Danny smiles and you start digging him again. Just finish with the damn
Danny McLean. I was my idol.
Back to the bag. You got another minute on the bag and you're done. Go ahead.
Doug Titus has sent us something at our website. And you can do that too if you like. AskNoFilter@gmail.com. And they're talking already about the Steve Kemp interview that we have coming up just shortly. Because what happens is we put out these guests in advance and people immediately start, oh boy, I'm so excited. So many people said that Kemp was one of their favorite Tigers ever. And Doug writes, my memories of Kemp were that he always hustled. He'd leg out a comebacker to the pitcher. Never got cheated on a swing. I remember when the Tigers were in Milwaukee, Brewers runner on first, Molitor was the batter. Line drive to left. Kemp took it right off his shoe tops. Everybody waited for the umpires to determine whether it was a catch or a trap. Kemp did not wait. He just fired to first. They ruled it a trap. Molitor was out. It's the only time I have ever seen a batter thrown out at first base from left field.
We got to ask him that. See if he remembers that. You know, some guys remember every pitch and every play they made. I have no idea whether he's one of those or not.
No question.
When I started covering the PGA Tour years ago, the thing that shocked me the most is, as you guys both know, when they bring in a guy who's just completed his round, there's a PR guy. He says, okay, take us through the round, Bill.
You know,
he remembers every shot.
Oh, yeah.
You do
number seven. Number seven, a little nine iron. A little thin. It was the back of the green. I had about 17 feet downhill, a little bit to the right. Went in, nice putt. Number eight, drive was, I hooked it a little bit. It was in the short rough, so I punched out with a nine iron to about 83 yards.
How do they do it?
Because you do it. You just remember, because each shot is important. You concentrate on every shot, and the round is like a story.
And remember one thing, they can't remember if they called their wife that morning, but they can remember every shot.
Yeah, funny. So Mitch tweeted about the Steve Kemp thing. I'll be listening, Bob. Love your show. And it makes my 12-hour work days go much faster. You guys can call us and leave a message or text us, 760-89-BALLS. Rick Ben left a message. Great shows as usual. I want to thank you guys for doing this show. It never fails to put a smile on my face. Denny, we had at least a couple people send in. They were concerned about you. They wished you well with your COVID-19 tests, which we discussed at the top of the show. So people out there really are thinking of you.
Well, I appreciate it.
And by the way, those people can come by October 2nd and buy all the stuff in his house if they like.
October 2nd, 3rd, and 4th.
By the way, I got to tell you, when we talk to Kemp here in a moment, when I called him the other day and tried to find the right time to do it and all that, he goes, you know, I'm getting four surgeries in the next few. I go, four surgeries? I think it's three or four. Four. He goes, I go, what? He says, I waited all these years. I got two torn rotator cuffs. I got two torn this. I got one torn that. He plays sports all the time. He plays golf with his buddies. And finally, he just turned 66. He's going to go in a few weeks and get everything zipped.
No.
So I may refer to that in the beginning, but you ready? Let's talk to the Kemper.
I got one more for you. I just want to thank Perry for writing in or calling, I should say.
And I got one thing too, but go ahead.
He says he listens to every single episode we do. The banter between you all is fantastic, and it adds value and excitement. Keep up the great work. He suggests, and you people downriver Detroit area, you might know Todd Williams. I certainly don't. He's from Monroe. Apparently, this guy has an amazing background in jiu-jitsu and does so much work for the community in Monroe and the area down there. He suggests him as a guest, but Perry,
I don't think so. We get the biggest names we can.
Yeah.
When we get into marathoners.
Well, by the way, the last thing.
Cross-country runners.
The last thing I ever got fixed was my left knee, and I haven't played golf since.
I thought you were thinking about coming back.
I'm going to hit some balls tomorrow.
All right, good.
What?
Can't wait. All right, let's talk to the Kemper. Steve Kemp, All-American at USC and the number one overall pick in the January 76 baseball draft, made it to the majors the very next year, 77, and instantly impressed Tiger fans with his hustle and hard-nosed play. He swung hard, too, and in this game against Milwaukee, just a month into his rookie year, Kemp got a rise out of both Ernie Harwell and Paul Carey in separate at-bats.
Well, they've set the table for Steve. Let's see if he can enjoy the meal here. Rodriguez delivers. Here's a swing and a miss. Oh, he gave him the home run cut, all right. Nobody swings any harder than Kemp does. When you got Ogle and Kemp swinging, they can clean the air out for you, those two guys.
There's a long drive to center field by Kemp. On the horses, Joshua. That may be. It's gone into the center field bleachers. Just a little bit to the right of dead center field. Kemp with his fifth home run as a Tiger. There's a tape measure job by Steve Kemp. It is a good 415 feet on that blast by Kemp. Now, the home run by Kemp will send a free case of Superior potato chips to the Hillcrest Center.
I had to keep the potato chips in there. By the way, Superior, completely natural food, no additives or preservatives, Paul. But anyway, Steve was 22 then. He just turned 66. And I guess
that's a lie. Steve Kemp could not be 66.
Well, he is, believe it or not, multiple surgeries. So, Steve, how you feel? I know you just had surgery. You waited all these years of playing hard sports. Finally, you're getting the stuff fixed. How's it going?
Things are good. Doctor just told me, be patient. I mean, I had two rotator cuff tears, a bicep tendon tear, and an elbow debris cleaning out. So he did all four at once. So it's going to take a little while, but I'm happy where I'm at. And what the hell can you do anyway? You know, everything's shut down. So I figured it was a good time to do it.
Steve, Denny McClain, good to see you, pal.
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm fine. I don't think we ever met in person, but I don't think
nice
so either.
Have opportunity to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much. We're really happy you're on the show. With all these surgeries you just had, what the hell are you going to do? You going to go back and play?
Oh, I can't see. I can't hit. I can't run and I can't throw. So I don't think it's going to work for me to try to come back.
You could play for the Marlins. You could play for the Marlins if that's the case.
Hey, wait a second. One of my best friends, Mattingly, is over there managing. Set the record for the most wins for a Marlins manager. But you know what? It's a tough gig, man. I'll tell you. But I couldn't play for anybody. I can't even play for the local girls softball team, 50 and over.
Once you get healed, you will.
Hey, you a lot of fun. So anyway, what I wanted to ask you is if you could tell our listening audience about the first radio interview you ever did with a member of the Detroit media.
Seriously?
It has to be Bob. It has to be Bob. Otherwise, he wouldn't have asked the question.
You don't remember this. So I'm at WJR in 1976. No internet, no ESPN, no nothing. Talk shows. But man, I'm hearing about Steve Kemp. I got to get this kid on the show. I called Birmingham, Alabama. You were out on the field before the game. They dragged you off the field just to talk to me over the telephone, and I'm shocked. I guess your memory's gone, too. We had a lot of fun.
No, you just...
Well, the memory has gone, but I sure as hell don't remember that, but if you say we had fun, I'm buying in.
Hey, listen, you're an All-American at USC. You win two national championships. They draft you. You burn it up at Evansville. You hit .386 at Evansville in the minors in 76. You tear your ankle ligaments in August, speaking of injury. But the next year you're here playing for Ralph Houk. Talk about joining the Tigers. You got the great Willie Horton there, who you replaced a year later. What was it like to get called up? And what do you remember about that? Bob is forgettable, but I'm sure getting called up wasn't.
Obviously, getting called up was exciting, and then I knew I was going up, and then 2 days before I was going up, I tore ligaments in my ankle. And actually, to believe it or not, I know it probably sounds like I get hurt a lot, but I played pretty much injury free until I got to New York. But basically, that was a little disappointing. Tigers took care of me. They brought me back to Detroit to have the surgery done. And it was kind of ironic because Aurelio Rodriguez had torn his ankle ligament. So Aurelio was nice enough to say, hey, you know, put the kid in with me, and that way he'll feel more comfortable. So that was pretty awesome. I'll just tell you, I played for a lot of big name managers, and Ralph Houck was the greatest manager I played for. I loved him to death. And I think he was very instrumental in the 84 team. You know, he brought us along and we'd learn things, but he'd let us make mistakes and then learn from our mistakes. And he knew he had some good young players that were going to do some things. And fortunately, that's what happened. And guys like Willie, and I got Mickey Stanley, took me under their wing and tried to teach me, you know, how to really act or handle myself. I was always respectful. I believed in myself. I think I was confident, but I wasn't arrogant. And I respected those guys very, very much. I just felt like I could play. And, you know, that was what I felt inside. But I definitely grew up, you know, with the approach of, you know, these are guys that are ahead of me and I want to learn from them. So,
but Steve, you really liked Les Moss, didn't you? You really liked him.
Oh, I love Les. I loved him to death, and I played for him in Montgomery, and I can say it now, but Les got screwed.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was the first time the team was over 500, and I think it was like at the All-Star break. I understand that the Tiger organization felt like they wanted to get a big name manager, someone that was great with the media. Les was a player's manager. I don't think he cared about the media that much. Not that he was rude or anything,
sure.
But Les was on the field manager and a player's manager. And I'll tell you, he had a lot of those guys in the minor leagues that ended up winning the championship in 84. Yeah. I played for Leland as well.
Did you?
And but the problem is I played for Les a very short amount of time, and I played for Leland a very short amount of time. But they are great managers. I love them to death. I guess I say I love Ralph the most is because that's who I broke in with. He really just allowed me to go out and play. It was funny. I don't know what I started out. I was like 1 for 30 or 2 for 30 or something. And he called me into his office. He goes, look at, he goes, kid, you can play. He goes, we're trading Horton. So you're out there. I don't want you looking, you know, over your shoulder. He goes, you're our left fielder. And then that day I went out and hit my first home run. So I just really appreciated him as a person as well as a manager. So
you know, Ralph Houck was one of the greatest leaders of men I ever met in sports. You didn't mention he's a highly decorated World War II combat veteran as a major. Yet I was at the news conference when Houck announced his resignation. The first words out of his mouth, ladies and gentlemen, the job here is done. Then the little guy comes in and the rest is history. Do you resent Sparky for having broken up that group?
No, I will tell you that, you know, my stepdad was a veteran and actually was a prisoner of war. And when he knew, he didn't really follow me that much when I played in high school, a little bit in college, but, and that was fine. But when he knew I was playing for Ralph, he was ecstatic. You know, he just had so much respect and knowledge of Ralph as a military man. And so, yeah, he served his country and he served it well.
Again, but he thought you guys were ready to win the World Series, Kemper. That's why he said the job here is done. And then
he did not say that. He meant that the young players were going to eventually win the World Series. They were.
I didn't mean necessarily
Trammell was 19 years old.
It was going to be a contending team now. And then they broke it up with you and Jason Thompson and other guys.
I think Sparky. Well, look it. If you, we don't, the show's not long enough and I'm not going to get into everything. I think people know why I got traded. And you asked me about it. Did I resent Sparky coming in? No, I didn't resent Sparky coming in. I knew nothing about him. I mean, as a person, I knew about all his accolades and, you know, what an icon he was with Cincinnati and God, I grew up idolizing Pete Rose and Carl Yastrzemski. And I love the Cincinnati Reds. I live here in California. If I ever went to a Dodger game, for instance, the only time I'd go is if they were playing the Reds, and I'd be out there. I wouldn't cheer, but, you know, I'd be like, you know, I'm for the Reds. And look, I got traded because circumstances were changing and salaries.
Yeah, you beat Campbell twice. Right, right. You beat Campbell twice. Yeah, you beat him twice in arbitration. Let me.
Well, I would hope I won because I deserved
it. Of course, of course, of course.
And Jim had a hard time with that.
Yes, he did.
And I didn't get a call from the Tigers. I didn't get a call from Campbell. I didn't get a call from Sparky that I had been traded. I found out from the media. My phone rang, and that's when you didn't have cell phones. But, yeah, I had call waiting. And my phone, I was on the phone from probably 12 in the afternoon till maybe 10, 11 o'clock at night. And people, I'd get off the phone and someone would be on call waiting. I'd get them and then the phone would ring. I'd pick up. I go, look at it, I'm doing an interview with so-and-so. And they'll go, that's all right. I'll wait. And if I did a 20, 30 minute interview, then they'd be on. As time went on, Sparky said that the reason I got traded was because my bat speed was slowing up. And it's because I was hitting a lot of balls from left center over to right center. And I
couldn't. What the hell would Sparky know about hitting?
I wasn't. Yeah,
it was hard to do.
I wasn't that type of hitter. And actually, I hit like they want people to hit today, to drive the ball all over the field. And it's funny because I go to Chicago and played under La Russa, and Charlie Lau is my hitting coach. And I love Brett. You know, I just hit how clutch he was, what a great player he was, everything. I went up to Charlie early on and I said, Charlie, God, I'm going to love working with you. I'm excited. I'm ready to listen because I want to be a better player, a better hitter. And he looks at me and he goes, we're not changing anything with you. You do what I want players to be able to do, and you do it naturally. So when Sparky said that, you know, it's trying to give an excuse why I got traded. I got traded because of money. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, right.
Let me bring this up. So 79, when he comes up, was actually early in the year. I think it was in May that they fired Moss and brought him up. He only played about 25 or 30 games. But you had your best season as a Tiger in 79. That's when you made the All-Star team. You had 318, 105 RBIs, 26 homers. So he kind of had to leave you alone. But he wanted everybody. He wanted Thompson. He wanted Rick Leach. He wanted every lefty to hit the ball into the right field seats, no matter how you hit. So, you know, I can see why you would have had a problem with Sparky. But did he leave you alone? What did Pete Rose say, who was, by the way, your idol? You can talk about that in a moment. Sparky, most guys, he just left alone, and you had to wonder where you stood. Did you ever wonder where you stood with him? And did he communicate with you the way Ralph Houk did, in such a nurturing way?
Well, it's funny because, first off, it's not that I didn't talk to him. I just did my thing. I knew I was in the lineup. I really didn't even have to look at the lineup card. I came to the ballpark. I knew I was going to play. And I mean, I prided myself on playing every day, and it was important to me. I was young. I didn't know. Even when I went to New York, and I will watch certain things now, maybe on Netflix, you know, it could have been Billy Martin or anything. And I was, you know, I good friends with Pinella and stuff, and Nettles and Gidry. I mean, that's the best thing about going to different teams, is I met some people and got to play with some people that I developed some great friendships with, at least when I was playing. But I didn't know that as a player, you could go up to the general manager's office and talk to them, or the owner. I mean, those guys in some of these things, they'd go up and talk to George, and you know, they talk to the general manager about things that are going on. And I never even entered my mind. I mean, when I played for the Tigers, I used to tell people, I go, if Fetzer and I were standing on a street corner in downtown Detroit and we're waiting for the light to change and we were the only two guys there, he wouldn't know that I played for him and I wouldn't know that he owned the team. I mean, I and Campbell didn't like so much, very much about me from the very beginning, because as an amateur draft, he came to my house to try to sign me.
Right.
And that's the only time he'd ever done that. He wasn't happy, and I didn't have an agent. That whole story's funny in itself. I mean, in our house, we had a family room and a living room, and then there was a fireplace that separated them, but you could walk around the fireplace to get to either one. Well, the fireplace is open. So my mom and I are sitting in the living room. My stepdad's sitting in the family room. And he's talking to Campbell and we're negotiating. Well, you can hear what I'm saying. I could hear what Campbell's saying. I mean, it was crazy, because, you know, just to have him come to the house, and I don't think he was happy with where I stood or how I felt. You know,
that you wanted to get paid a major, right, you wanted a major league contract. Yeah.
That was probably the biggest no-no. He'd never given anybody a major league contract from an amateur draft, and he wasn't going to do it. And I wasn't going to sign unless I got one, because I wanted the guaranteed money instead of taking all the money up front, you know, the bonus. And on top of it, he goes, well, we won't have rights to you. We'll only have rights to you for 3 years. And I said, if I'm not in the big leagues within 3 years, I'm 21 years old right now. If I'm not in the big leagues in 3 years, I'm not going to be there anyway. So I said, I'm not going to be held down, or like you see guys now, you know, they want to have, you know, rights to them for as long as they can. And I get that. There's a lot of money involved, but, you know, so that in itself was not a
bad start.
A good start with Jim.
We got a lot of older Tiger fans listening to us, really all over the country, and they love you. And so many tweeted you were one of their favorite players. You were a great young player. Then you left, and you were a great young player until that fateful day in Yankee Stadium before a game, when you were hit by a line drive in the face. 40 hours of dental work followed, almost lost your eye, and you were never the same player again. How do you look back at that now?
Well, let me tell you.
It was 83. That was 1983. Go ahead.
Was it 83?
Yeah, well, 84? Yeah. I'll quickly set it up. I'm not going to interrupt. 82, your only season in Chicago. You had a great year, your best year. You got traded to the Yankees after that. And then
free agent.
A free agent. Okay. As you're a Yankee, you were off to a great start with them. And then you get hit in the eye by Omar Moreno in practice. That was in.
Okay. Yeah. So here's some history. And I'm glad I get to talk about this, because a lot of people, they assume, or they make up stories. I mean, that's why I don't do the internet thing. I mean, my kids come up to me once and they go, Dad, I read this stuff. Your nickname was Ashtray. I go, what? And they go, yeah, your nickname's Ashtray. You told us you never smoked. I go, don't believe the crap you read. I go, you know, people just write what they want. But bottom line is, I went to Chicago. I felt like I had a really, really good year there. Maybe, like you said, one of my best years, better than 79, 80. But basically, Steinbrenner wanted me bad. I ended up signing, had no fears in New York. I was excited about going to New York. Spring training was great, started off the season. Like the first four games, I think I had two home runs, a triple, and four or five RBIs. Was hitting well over 300. It's only four or five games. Granted, we go into Toronto and it's freezing, and we were playing in the old stadium, and I had a severe collision, me, Willie Randolph, and Jerry Mumphrey, and I messed up my shoulder bad, my lead shoulder. So it changed my swing, but I just kept playing and playing and playing, and it bothered me. And through spring, I mean, Billy was loving me and everything was great. Well, I couldn't hit the same, and then I got on his bad side. You know, George wants to win, which I understand that. And then I was, you know, playing some or not playing, and that was hard for me. But then anyway, I got hit with a line drive later in the season, and I lost vision. and it's hard to play. I mean, Denny will tell you, if you have no depth perception, how am I going to hit someone throwing, you know, 95 and then they throw me split finger? So I tried to make some adjustments and I did all right, but I wasn't the same. You know, that was weird. I mean, I got hit. I was walking out to the outfield after BP and I was at shortstop and a bunch of people, heads up. I turned around, the ball hit me square in the left eye, just like it was going into the pocket of a glove. God. I went down, I put the glove over my face, and Rudy May comes, he's going, Kemper, because he was at the screen for BP. And he goes, Kemper, move your glove. I go, no, it's bad. He goes, no, come on, move it. We got to see. And I go, no, it's bad. I know. And he goes, Kemper, you got to move the glove away from your face. And I did. And he goes, oh, shit. And I'm like, okay, that's good. And I even thought about, God, should I pass out? And I go, no, I better not do that. I might not wake up. I went to the hospital in the ambulance. I was in intensive care for a full day. I was in the hospital for a week. George was awesome. People can say what they want about George Steinbrenner. I loved playing for him, and he was so good to me. Even when I didn't perform like I expected myself to perform. And I'll tell you, I told a writer in Detroit, Bill Dowd, I said, I'm embarrassed of my career. And he goes, what? And I go, I'm embarrassed because I expected to do a lot more with my career. I believed I could be a Hall of Famer. And for whatever reasons, you know, in New York, yeah, I got hit in the eye. But I said, I just didn't do what I expected out of myself.
People falsely blamed you later. They said, well, the pressure of New York, or they accuse you of doing drugs or ashtray or stuff like that. It's really tough. Yeah, it's tough.
Exactly. And that bothers me because I never did drugs and the pressure in New York didn't bother me. I was looking forward to it, to be honest with you. I felt very comfortable with the guys on the team. I got along with everybody and there were some great guys I played with. You know, I drove to the ballpark every day with Baylor, just a great human being. You talk about, you don't want to get on the wrong side of him, but I felt good driving the ballpark with him. But anyway, I will just tell you that never entered the equation. And, you know, not that the podcast is going to be heard by a lot. I don't know how that all works, but I'm glad I could say.
Millions of people are listening to this right now.
Everyone's going to know. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I don't know. So I'm just glad I could get that out because really it was the shoulder injury that created the beginning. And if I was playing in today's game and my shoulder, I got hurt that bad, I would have been, okay, go get an MRI. Go look at, oh, he's got his shoulder, whatever. We're putting him on the DL. He's not going to play full rest. I just kept playing, and I didn't say a whole lot. You know, I'd go into the trainer's room and ice it, but that's what you did. Ask Denny. You just, how many times did he pitch when, you know, he was hurt or messed up or what? It's just what you did in that era.
That's right. It was Greenies. It was Greenies, ice, and cortisone. Those were the three drugs.
don't complain.
I might admit to two of those. You pick which
plus,
two.
Plus black coffee with the Greenies.
Well, hey, I don't know what two, but I'm...
Steve, let me ask you this. You're a strong believer that Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame, right?
Oh, no question.
Let me ask you a question. Did you ever read the 219-page report? No, listen, you guys want to laugh about this stuff? You're crazy. I know. Because I'm going to tell you, if you read the 219-page report, and I've told Eli this 100 times because he still hasn't read it, there are betting tickets in there that he bet against Cincinnati. Would you now bet against them? Now would you put him in the Hall of Fame?
Yes, because I'm putting him in the Hall of Fame because of his baseball accolades, his career. He was betting when he was a manager. I don't like to know that he bet against his team, but I don't think he would throw a game. I think he just knew what he was up against, and I think he would still try to win the game. But well,
back to you, if we can, Steve. I'm curious to know, and all the listeners are too. Your career ended prematurely. What have you done with your life since then? You're living in California. Where and what are you doing now?
I live in an area called Corona Del Mar, which is basically like Newport Beach. I'm very fortunate. Mm-hmm. I love, you know, the area that I live in. Really, it just stayed retired. 1 year I coached a high school baseball team because their coach got suspended by the league. A gentleman that I knew asked if I would take over because they didn't have a coach, and I ended up doing it. It's a lot of hours. I give these coaches so much credit that work with these kids. It's not just going to the games, and it's a lot of hours. And, you know, I had parents come up to me because I just let the kids have fun. I just said, look, I'm not going to have all these. You got to have the right hat on, the right color jersey. I mean, we have spring practice, and kids would go, and coach, can I take off my shirt? I go, yeah, because you're just going to go to the beach anyway when this 2-hour practice is done. I did that, and I had parents come up to me and say, you know, my kid's a senior, and he's participated in team sports since he was a freshman, and he just raved about playing for you and the way you treated the players. I mean, I had a kid come up to me when and he'd look at the lineup card, and my best player was a first baseman, and this kid was a first baseman, and he'd look and he'd go, Guy, I'm not in the lineup again. And I'd say his last name, and I go, no, you're not in the lineup today, and you won't be tomorrow. I go, but I love having you on the team. And I told kids, I go, look, I don't know you guys. And I said, don't ever, ever let someone tell you you can't do something. And I go, if you don't play, it doesn't mean that you can't play. Don't ever let anybody take away your confidence and believe in yourself. I go, who's to say I know what the hell I'm doing? I go, I'm just going by what I see in a short span, and that's what I'm doing. So like right now, I've been doing some stuff for a guy that's from Michigan, and he owns a company called Team Golf, and he's licensed in all the major sports, baseball, basketball, football, college sports. So he does golf accessory stuff like head covers, towels, chips, you know, ball markers. And he just asked me, he goes, you're not doing anything, Kemper. He goes, do you want to do some stuff for me? You know, you're not working for anybody, whatever you do. And I deal with corporate people just, you know, if they want to have a big event and they need something with their logos on it, and then it could be affiliated with baseball or football or basketball because we're licensed. And I don't need to get into the whole thing, but that's kind of what I've been doing for the last 3-4 years. And I meet some cool people. That's sure. Really what it's about. I don't make hardly anything, but it just sometimes keeps me busy. So,
Last question from me. You said it pretty much in this interview that your 5 years here in Detroit were the best of your career. You made great friends. You were part of a young team. You had some terrific years. Chicago only lasted a year. We know what happened with the Yankees. And I know you go to the fantasy camp now. So it seems like these 5 years of your career are the ones that you honor the most, and that you like still seeing fans by going to the fantasy camp and everything. Is that how you feel about your years with the Tigers?
Eli, 100%. The people of Michigan, for whatever reasons, hopefully it's because they like the way I play, but they accept me as one of theirs.
Yep.
And I've made some good friendships with people from the fantasy camp. It's been, a lot of fun for me to participate in it. I did some corporate suite stuff for them when they were doing that, and met some great people. One of my best friends, Tommy Brookins, I stay in touch with. I love him. But I'll tell you, I feel blessed because I have so many people, more so in the fantasy camp, because these people know baseball. They know Tiger baseball. That's why they go to the fantasy camp, a lot of them. And, they'll always say, you know, if you do a Q&A or something, they go, look, we look at you as part of the Tigers 84 team. You know, we just feel that we'll always, and people will ask me to sign stuff, and I go, you don't want me to sign this. This is for the 84 World Series team. And they'll either go, well, I want you to sign it, or, oh, you know, maybe they don't know. And they go, oh, I thought you were on that team. You know,
but you know what? You know what, Steve? One thing that I think you know this now. Once you're a Tiger, you're always a Tiger. No matter where you go, if you got a show to do or an appearance to make, they will come out of the woodwork to say hello and get autographs and things like that. I want to thank you for appearing with us today. Thank you very much.
Good job, Kemper. Great talking to you.
Really great.
Good luck recovering from all those surgeries. And
I'm good. So, and Denny, thank you for the nice comment. And you're right. People in Michigan are the best fans in the world. And I feel blessed that that's where I started my career.
Good for you.
Hang in there, Kemper. Thanks for the memories.
Thanks, Stevie. Stevie,
thanks.
Take care
of you guys. Good luck to you. All right.
Thank you, my friend.
Just one last note, Steve. Why the hell don't you move back to Michigan then and make a living being Steve Kemp?
Because my kids ask me why I won't move to Denver or to Colorado. They live in the outskirts, like just outside of Aspen or something. I go, are you crazy? I go, if it gets below 50 or if it gets in the 50s here, my hands go numb. I go, I cannot handle cold weather. So that ain't happen. Michigan in the late spring and summer, early fall.
That's enough.
Beautiful. Cool. Love it.
Cool.
But I can't handle the cold weather. So that's that. And I grew up here and I got a lot of friends here in California. So. Yeah. But my heart's in Michigan, believe me, with when it comes to baseball, you know, so that's my home.
Cool.
And I feel blessed. And you're right, Denny, what you said. And it's a nice pleasure to finally have met you, Denny.
Thank you. Me
not
too,
that it's
Steve.
In person, but
me too.
You know what? You were unbelievable. Unbelievable. So congrats to you on a great career.
That. Cool, Kemper.
Take
talk to you
yourself,
later, man.
Kemp.
Take
Thank
care,
you.
Buddy. Okay.
All right,
Bye-bye.
You guys.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, good talking to the Kemper again. I tell you, you know, it's interesting. You were mentioning one of you, I think Denny was, about how, you know, part of the 84 team, they would have won the World Series with him as opposed to Chet Lemon. It's the same thing reminded me when Chuck Daly said when it was all said and done, the Pistons were the history was well written, and he goes, you know, we could have won with Trepuka. We could have won with Dantley. And we won with Aguirre. It didn't really matter. They were all three interchangeable. Same thing with Kemper. If it wasn't for the salaries, the contracts, the Sparky, the Campbell, he'd have still been here and he'd have been a part of all of it.
Except so remember this. So Chet Lemon played center field and he was a road runner. He could go get him.
So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you again Thursday. Our guest will be the one and only Dickie V. Makes a return engagement to talk about his charity work and what's going on with basketball. See you then.
Stay safe.
Thanks, everybody.